Well, welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection, ladies and gentlemen, warriors of all nations. It's 25 years since Desert Storm, and now it's time for our nation to honor all the veterans and the individuals involved in that war. So what we're going to discuss now with the 25th anniversary coming up is the new Desert Storm War Memorial. Scott Stump, welcome, Scott. Are you there? Denise, are you there?
I'm here.
Ray is here.
Ray is there. Okay. Scott, are you there yet by chance? Okay. Well, hey, Denise, you can tell. Well, hopefully Scott will be calling right in. He was set to. Tell us a little bit about what you know about the new war memorial.
Well, I know that we're going to have to raise a lot of money. It's self-funding.
You got to speak up, please.
As the Vietnam Wall was. And when I talked to Scott earlier, he talked about having to raise $35 million in a year here. I know they're doing golf tournaments, trying to connect with people in different areas of the country to organize golf tournaments. He needs everybody's help getting to people in your state that may have funds to donate. I'm thinking of the people in Colorado and the corporations that I can approach to get them to donate to that cause. I know that the meeting they're having this week in D.C., with the Memorial Commission people is about where it will be located. I know they're all talking about Area 1, so you might want to do a search for Area 1 in D.C. And see on their map where it's at. I have talked to Scott about putting the map up so that that's on Facebook and their website. So they're having a meeting this week, and it's mainly to decide location. So I'm hoping he calls in. I know he's up in D.C. I was planning to be up there and go to the commission meeting to connect with him and to meet him in person finally. But I was originally going up there to be part of the roundtable for the VA RAC committee that ended up getting canceled because of all the airlines canceling flights. So it was kind of a mess having that plan for a Tuesday in D.C. and with them canceling flights. But I know that Scott's made it, I think, up there. And so, Scott, are you online yet? I guess we'll give him a few minutes to connect with us. If he does get connected with us, I hope that he speaks up quickly and lets us know he's online. We did line him up. He is up there making a lot of visits to a lot of areas that could possibly lend support for the memorial. I know that one of their latest announcements was that George H.W. Bush will be involved in helping us. So that is going on, people. We've got to get involved. We got the bill passed through to law to have the memorial. And the other thing that I know that's going on in D.C. that I'll mentioned, since we're talking about memorials, is that in D.C. there was only one memorial to World War One, which was the one put up by the District of Columbia years and years and years ago. Our last living World War One vet was very active, even when he hit 100 years old, going up and pushing for that to be World War One National Monument in D.C. We do have the one in Kansas City that is also recognized as the National World War One Memorial. They have cleaned up that little area. It's over on the side toward the Martin Luther King Memorial and the Roosevelt FDR Memorial. It's across the street from those. It was hard to see for a long time. I remember taking pictures when I first went to D.C. and putting them out on the email networks that needed to be cleaned up. The little monument was being neglected. It was overgrown bushes. You couldn't even see it. Now the bushes have been trimmed back, the walkways are improved, they've cleaned it up, it's beautiful. But that was put up by the District of Columbia. What they're doing for the World War One that was just announced yesterday, I believe, was they chose out of five designs the memorial that will be a national one on Pennsylvania. It's where Pershing Park is what it's called. If you look it up on the Internet, Pershing Park. and they had design competition, and they chose one and announced it. I have reviewed those five. My stepfather served in World War I overseas in France. And so I very definitely keep my eye on all the history of our wars and our veterans. And so I was taking a particular interest in what they were doing, and they did decide on one of, I had reviewed the five designs, and there was two on my top list, the third one, which was okay, but they did choose the design, and it's recognizing the sacrifice of the veterans. So you can Google that, World War I Memorial, and get the website to go look at the design. But what they're doing is there was a park there that had General Pershing's statue and had a few other little things. It was a nice little park. But they're taking that park and redesigning it to a national memorial for World War I. They did announce the competition winner, and so I guess progress will start on that relatively soon. Again, that's one of the memorials up in D.C., and it's important to have a memorial. It gives a place, as everybody knows, the Vietnam Memorial was a groundbreaker up there. And after that, the Korean War Veterans Memorial. And Vietnam vets have been very involved in, you know, getting those things done. And then the World War II Monument, which is huge. And as you walk down from the Lincoln Memorial, you see the Vietnam Wall out to your left. To the right is the Korean War Memorial. If you walk down the reflecting pool toward the World War II Memorial, off to the right, you will see that World War I Memorial that was put up by the District of Columbia many decades and decades ago. So, you know, we're talking about Area 1. It's very hard now to get places dedicated in D.C., and I'm hoping that we get a good location for it. I was hoping that it would be right there in the area of the Vietnam, the Korean War, the World War II, and maybe, you know, into that area that faces the Washington Memorial. I was hoping that Scott would get on.
Hello?
Scott, are you online?
Sure.
Doug, I don't think we've gotten Scott. Did you give the producer Scott's phone number to call him?
Well, let me say one thing about the memorials, and you said they were important, but I think with the Vietnam thing, I think most of us came back and we had a feeling of abandonment, maybe. It was over. Everything was done. Nobody wanted to hear about it. And I think the memorial did something for a lot of veterans, just a feeling that they weren't so abandoned, and we were able to get a little bit of a, feeling like we came home. And I think the Gulf War probably would have the same feeling for a lot of veterans, because a lot of them came back home, and they just feel like it was done, it was over, and they've had to take care of life, you know. And I think the VA has helped, but I think they're so overwhelmed that a lot of these guys aren't getting the treatment they need. But I think the memorial does a little bit of a spiritual value as far as bringing us back home and feeling a little more appreciated.
I think so too, Ray. And one of the things I've noticed, and I've been up there for Veterans Day and Memorial Day, and in between, when I'm in town and for a meeting, I try to get down there because I was Vietnam era. So I like to go down there and, you know, be around it. And one of the things I think it gives is a place that veterans can come. When they come to D.C., they can bring their families and their children. A lot of school kids take trips up there. It gives the vets a place to be in D.C. And I cannot tell you how many times I met other Gulf War vets by just being up there in the area of the Vietnam Wall and Veterans Day and Memorial Day, when we have all the vets with their campers out to the side, and I forgot what they call the street where they've set up a lot of functions there. And yeah, you meet other veterans of other wars, and it's
you
not
do.
Just Vietnam. And it's like we're all brothers and sisters together, and it gives a place for people to come. There's memorials all across the country now to Vietnam and Gulf War.
We had a reunion. It was 30 years after we got ambushed one day where we lost the whole platoon, dead and wounded. And it was 30 years before we could ever get anybody back together again from that ambush. And there was 9 of us there. And we had come from all over the country. And I had each one of these guys to bring a little baggie of dirt from their homes out in the front yard or wherever they got it from, just a little baggie full, cup full. And when we got to the Vietnam Memorial, that's where all the guys' names are, and we took all those little bags from the guys and we poured it into one bag. We sifted it all around, and then we took it up to the memorial where these guys' names are, and we poured it out on the ground and sifted it. And it became like a perpetual coming back together again. And we could never be separated again. And it was just kind of a tribute kind of thing, but it did a lot of healing in that. And I think there's certain things we can do when you have a place to go to rejoin with the people who died. I think there's a little bit of healing in that. So we have to do whatever.
That's all really important. Denise, you got to speak up a lot louder because we're hardly getting you through.
I know many Gulf War veterans are planning reunions with their groups this year. I know Marines started doing theirs, 5-10 years ago, of their units trying to come together. So they've been struggling to do that in different locations. I know this past year there was a cruise. There'll be another one in, I think, a year from now. They've got another cruise being lined up. They also have the 24th Infantry Division, if I said that right, are having a reunion. There's also the 7th Corps is having a reunion in D.C. So our reunions that have struggled quietly, I do have a Facebook page where I'm trying to post those, and it's Gulf War, and it's events and reunions page, because the word has to get out there and people have to find each other. The Vietnam vets did a wonderful job. Finally, pulling reunion groups together, Kokomo, Indiana, and they opened their doors to the Gulf War vets. So we need to encourage that. It is a healing. It is coming back together after, it's been 25 years for us now. And, a place to come and come together and get to know each other again, to reunite the families, to be more of a support to each other. I know that one of the people organizing the 24th reunion is trying to get a speaker on Gulf War illness. He's contacted me. I'm not sure if I'll be able to do it, but I'm going to find somebody that can speak to Gulf War illness and give them the resources they need of what they need to be doing and taking questions. So it's important when we have these reunions in more ways than one.
Right. Doug, have you been to the Vietnam Memorial, too? Or?
Yeah, I've been there. Denise, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear
you. Yeah, because you're going to have to speak up a lot louder. Your volume is not coming through, and the producer came on and said you need to speak louder. Something's not going through right there.
I'll try a different phone, but can you ask if Scott's online yet?
The book that I wrote, The Never Ending War, Doug, the subtitle was Unseen Scars of Post-Traumatic Stress, and a lot of that has to do with the internal scars that is done from a lot of things. There were a lot of things happening in Vietnam about, the Agent Orange and also the anti-war groups. And look, I have to thank them a little bit because had they not somebody stood up, we might have still been in that war. I don't know how long it would have gone. But I don't go along with everything because a lot of it turned against the military themselves. And, my book has a couple places where we found actually enemy weapons and such with notes saying, this was donated by American students and different things, which, you don't know about that. But it did cause a lot of anger and a lot of internal problems with the veterans itself, and I can understand some of that. But there's a lot of things that happens that goes internal, and a guy can carry, either one, female or male, they can carry the rest of their lives. And there has to be a healing somewhere along the way, and God wants to give them that, but they have to ask for it. And, I always say the VA has been good. They gave me therapy and medication, but I also needed peace and healing and forgiveness. There were a lot of moral injury. Anytime you're in warfare, you talk about dropping bombs on people. There's still some moral injury in that, and we all have to have that peace. So I think having a memorial is a more of a standard of where we run to and we kind of join together. And I know we're all Americans, everybody in America. You know, we seem like we're growing every day. But that 1% who goes to war are unique. They have sacrificed their lives in a lot of different ways because of physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And they unite together every now and then. And a memorial is a great place to do that. We can rally around. We can revisit even the spirits of people we loved who are no longer with us. But it's a great deal. So I appreciate, you know, the monuments and the people who have contributed and who have done those things, and even the government that has, you know, allowed that and helped us with that. So that's going to be a great day. It's going to be a great thing there. So I'd like to be part of that.
Yeah, it's all important because I know when
the... Let me go ahead and give some information. Can you hear me better now? I switched phones. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Denise. Speak up a little louder.
The information on the reunion for 7th Corps, that's the 25th reunion, and that's scheduled for 26th through 28th February, and it will be in Arlington. There's an online registration if you just put in, you know, the HTTP, and then 25.DesertStormVeterans.org. Easy to remember, 25.DesertStormVeterans, all together, or DesertStormVets.org.
It'll be a big reunion.
Yeah, so that's a big one. And there is going to be more coming out. And like I said, I'm trying to grab information as it comes my way. The one for the 24th Infantry Division will be on February 24th, 28th at Fort Stewart, Georgia. And if you Google or go to Facebook and go 24th ID Reunion, they have a Facebook page set up. So I'm trying to grab reunion information and other events and put it on one Facebook page so that it's not missed with our other pages that... We have so many pages, and they talk about everything under the sun. They put pictures up, and you can miss things. But, you know, it's healthy discussion. On the Gulf War Illnesses page, we try to just concentrate on Gulf War illnesses. And then we have other pages that I encouraged and brainstormed for people to say, let's just have one page for all the photos that anybody has. Put all your photos on one page instead of mixing them in and losing track of them. We have a video page with videos. So I'm just an organizing person that says, hey, instead of having these pictures on different Facebook pages, you know, you can do that, but also put them on one site, you know, and concentrate just on that topic.
Denise,
so,
last week,
you know, a lot of us are trying to do different things to remember our quartermaster group that got killed by the Scud. Doug, would you remember that, how the Scud attack
say,
that hit and killed so many?
I didn't hear you, Denise. Say it again.
The barracks that was hit during the end of the Gulf War.
Oh, yeah, the barracks that was hit during Desert Storm, they were out of Pennsylvania.
Right.
And there was a Scud missile attack, and then, you know, it launched a Patriot missile, but then, again, when it hit it, but then it still diverted it and then went on down and hit the Pennsylvania unit.
Wow.
So we had, I know in our unit, we had, I counted 32 Scuds that came over our heads and blew up. So there were a lot of Scuds all over creation at all that time. And just thinking about all the individuals and everything, I mean, for me, I mean, Denise, you and I have both been to the Vietnam War together, memorial together multiple times at all the memorials. And, I mean, they're a place of healing. I mean, with the stuff that happened, you go there and you can remember your friends, you can put your fingers on them. It doesn't bring it back or anything. You can leave mementos. I think everybody through history has left incredible amounts of items, artifacts at the Vietnam War Memorial. And another thing with the memorial, I know I've had the honor to escort the Vietnam, the moving wall. You know, when that came through here, I mean, you know, all the vets got together and they formed a giant escort. The escort was, you know, miles and miles long as they escorted the wall, you know, once it came to the Illinois state line and there wherever it was going.
Right.
And I have to say thank you to the Vietnam Traveling Memorial because they also included about the Gulf War and OIF and OEF when I saw it here last time in Denver. They had, you know, different exhibits for those wars that were very nice that they had added those. The other thing is that the all the stuff being left at the Vietnam Memorial has been collected, is maintained in a warehouse. I know there's times that the Smithsonian puts up a special exhibit, and that's where it's pulled from. And, you know, the museum that's being built kind of underground by the Vietnam Wall will have a lot of that. But they just got a warehouse full of material up in D.C. of things that were left at the wall, letters, pictures, the whole everything that has been collected every night, maybe twice a day they collect it from the wall. So they have so much that the Vietnam Memorial Foundation, you know, pushed to have a museum, to have more there. And so it's a continual struggle, but it is a place of healing, a place that families in the distant future can come to. The reason I brought up the barracks that, you know, was hit was, I think, was one of the first memorials that went up, and it was by their base where they deployed from, that had gone into disrepair, and some local vets discovered it had gone into disrepair, and over the past year brought media attention to it. You know, the base was supposed to take care of it, and it has been cleaned up, refurbished, by efforts of their fellow Gulf War vets that went out to go there in a quiet time to remember them. And so as we approached anniversary date, they got it cleaned up before January. It was in terrible need. Weeds were all over the place. Concrete wall was kind of breaking down. And they really have done a very nice job. And there is a Facebook page set up for that to keep people informed about it. But, you know, we need to keep an eye in our state for things that have been set up and be sure that they're maintained appropriately.
Well, you can also, just with a memorial, you can get a database going with people that, so you were talking about last week that it was hard to get people organized because they're all over the place. But when you have a certain place you go, it's a good place to get information to people. And you could expand the database a lot just by the memorial itself, by giving so many veterans information of what they can do to encourage the VA to start giving, you know, more treatment and more, you know, just visual to these Gulf War veterans. They're finally recognizing the fact you guys are wounded, and now hopefully they'll start moving forward.
I know for a fact that the World War II Memorial has a beautiful system set up that anybody that visits can put in history. The Women's Memorial at Arlington has that set up. I don't know if Vietnam and Korean War got one set up. But what's important with the World War II was it was right there to be done, right there when you visit the monument. The Women's Memorial is right inside the building that you can go in there at Arlington and enter your data for the women. You know, and I would almost be, probably should have written the memorial commission before now, but I think that should be included or added to any monument of any war so that you have a database.
Yeah, it's a good source.
Yeah, if you get that database going, but again, the same thing. It's, you know, an assembly point. Now, you know, obviously, you know, the nation's capital is where these are all located on the mall, and it creates an incredible thing there. I mean, both Memorial Day when we've been there with Rolling Thunder, or Veterans Day in November. I mean, so many there in the crowds and everything. I remember one time, Denise, and you and I were involved in it. They had a major USO show right on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. And, again, the healing that was going on there was just mind-boggling.
I've been for several years. I ride motorcycles, so I generally ride. But most of the time, I ride with my lieutenant from Vietnam. Bill was hit with a piece of shrapnel, and it tore his eye out, really. And just a wonder he didn't, tear his brain on a piece or two. One of the secrets was, and Bill told me this, he said, when I was sitting there in the darkness up on that hill in the middle of that firefight, he said he took out his pistol and was going to shoot himself in the head because he couldn't imagine coming home blind the rest of his life. And he said just before he pulled the trigger, he just happened to open his other eye and he could see. And he said he put the pistol back in his holster. So, you know, there's a lot of things that go on there that he's a miracle. And now Bill, he was a lieutenant back then, but now he runs a 26-mile marathon every year. And so he almost ended his own life back in Vietnam because of an injury. But thank the Lord he didn't do it, and now we meet together every year. And there's a couple other veterans that I served with that we meet sometimes too. And it's just a good place to have fun and have a good weekend, and Rolling Thunder is a great deal. So a lot of people show appreciation. I think one year they had 900,000 motorcycles out there.
Yeah.
That's a lot of motorcycles.
Yeah, they fill up both of the Pentagon parking lots now.
Oh, yeah.
And
three of the parking
lots. Much less the ones that, you know, assemble at the hotels and head out.
Yeah.
So it's huge. And they're north and south routes every year. I follow that. I talk to people about it online and kind of inform them of the website to keep track of people if they come through your area and you can't travel to D.C., at least go out there and see them come through your area.
Yeah. So, and, you know, one thing that you find in Rolling Thunder is there's a lot of veterans, but there's a lot of non-veterans, too. And
yeah.
When you're riding down that parade route on a motorcycle and people are shouting and waving flags and throwing kisses and throwing flowers, and it's like the welcome home we never really got, really. And the first time you do that, it's really an amazing time. And well, every time, I guess, but that first time is a very special time because, you know, most of us slipped back home. We were rotated in, we rotated out, and we didn't even make a splash when we came home. A lot of people didn't even know we left. And so it was a very disheartening part of Vietnam was that nobody even recognized it, and there were no welcome home to it. General Westmoreland said one time to the American people, he said, if you're not going to welcome them home, do not send them. And I think it was a lesson learned from Vietnam, and I hope they learned that lesson.
I think that was, you know, an important thing, because I know when I came back from Vietnam, I basically had my last combat mission,
yeah.
You know, flying B-52s, and it wasn't maybe probably 36 hours where I was back sitting in a VFW in Libertyville.
Exactly.
You know, not knowing which way's up and down, and you came back as an individual. You'd gone over as an individual. I mean, we went to Desert Storm. We went over as a unit, but then because of my assignments with all the other stuff I ended up doing, I came back as an individual. And it was just kind of like, okay, you're here, and now what do we do? And the other thing, too, I think that's important, and a memorial can help do this, is that today you don't have that delay where the individuals have time to decompress or to recover.
Exactly.
Or discuss all this stuff. I mean, when our fathers went to war, they went over in a ship and they came back, so they were, you know, weeks in transit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you go into combat, you come out of combat, and, you know, 12 hours later, you're back home.
Right.
I mean,
when I came back from Vietnam, I was only back a couple of days. I went into a pool hall back in my hometown and some guys I knew in there, and I was just standing there talking. I leaned up on a pool table, and this old man that worked there walked up and pulled me off. He just pushed me off of it, really. and said, stay off the pool table. And I thought to myself, I was in the jungle about a week ago, and I was out there killing people. And you push me around. You don't know anything about me. And, you know, I had to calm myself down. But we don't, when you do the automatic thing of coming home, you don't know where that guy was yesterday. And so it's a lot of internal anger and disappointment and things. The other day, I don't know if I even said this before. I've said it so many times, but I was at a book signing, Doug, and a young Marine came up to me, and he said, I just came back from Afghanistan, and he said, I stopped in Germany and said to decompress, and said that they sent me to a chaplain because I was having a little depression, and the chaplain gave me, he said, I got a book I want you to read, and he gave it to him. It's my book. And, you know, that's one of those things that it's just amazing because I truly believe it is helping these veterans, and there are actually chaplains and different people using the book that I've written, That Never-Ending War. I read something the other day, and it said, anybody can count the seeds inside of an apple, but only God can count the apples inside of one seed. And sometimes we do something very small. We don't think much about it, but, you know, when God gets hold of it, he puts it all over the place, and you don't know anything about it. And that was one of those times I realized that, you know, you're doing something, you're trying to help some of these veterans, and we see our little world around us, but we don't understand what is going on over in Germany and Afghanistan and all these places. So, Doug, you may never see what comes out of this program, but you understand that you don't have to see it. All you do is know you're putting information out there, you and Denise, and you're trying to reach these guys, and you'll never know the benefits that just talking about it, giving them information, really does a lot of good for a lot of people. And I appreciate
well, I'm going to ask, is Scott online yet? Scott, have you called in? Please
yeah,
identify yourself.
Yeah, they called him, and Scott was on a train. He's going to call us momentarily.
Okay, well, he's getting where he can call. I'm going to go on and put one announcement out for him. The National Capitol Memorial Advisory Committee meets tomorrow, Thursday, to discuss the location in Washington, D.C. for the memorial. We need everyone to write an email today, right now, this evening, before tomorrow's meeting, an email to the commission asking them to pick the best possible location for the National Desert Storm War Memorial in the Area 1 region of the Capitol. This is the area where the other war memorials have been placed. Each person can communicate in the email to send it to. I'm going to repeat it three times. Brandon, B-R-A-N-D-O-N, underscore, B-I-E-S. That's Brandon, B-R-A-N-D-O-N, underscore, B-I-E-S, at N, as in November, P as in Papa, S as in Sierra, NPS.gov. Okay, I'm going to repeat it one more time. It's Brandon, B-R-A-N-D-O-N, underscore, B-I-E-S, at NPS.gov. That's NovemberPapaSierra.gov. And that will go directly to the Memorial Advisory Committee. And what we're talking about is to say briefly that we want to be in Area 1 close to the other war memorials in D.C. and how critically important it is. You can use your own words, and it doesn't have to be very long. On their Facebook page, they have a little basic letter. I'll read it to you. Dear Mr. May, who is the chairman, I want to voice my enthusiastic support for the construction of the National Desert Storm War Memorial in Washington, D.C. Operation Desert Storm was a very significant event in our country's modern history. We liberated the country of Kuwait while restoring the belief in the dominance of the U.S. armed forces and American power. The over 300 Americans who made the ultimate sacrifice in the war should never be forgotten. I would also like to strongly encourage you and all of the other members of the NCMAC to allow the memorial to be constructed in close proximity to the other war memorials in an Area 1 location. By doing this, you allow the Desert Storm War Memorial to take its rightful place of honor for generations to come, for our living veterans, survivors, and their families to honor their memories. Thank you for your consideration for the work you do. Sign it sincerely, your name, address, city, and state, and zip. So two short paragraphs at the most, and get that email in. And the email, again, goes to Brandon_Bies, B-I-E-S, at nps.gov today. And Brandon_Bies is all in small caps.
It seems one good place, again, when we're looking up there and we've walked the mall many times, an area just adjacent to the Vietnam Wall there, as you're walking back towards the Capitol, that park area there might be available. And that's right there within Area 1.
Well,
so now you've got all of them lined up all together.
The commission decides the location. And one of the things I mentioned to Scott when I was talking to him is if people have been up there and know about the World War One monument that was put up by the District of Columbia, it's kind of to the right of the reflecting pool as you walk down from the Vietnam Memorial to the World War II. There is plenty of room up there on the right side adjacent to the World War One monument. It's a little bit of a walk, but it's in the same general area. So I would think that would be a great location. What you have is you have the street going through D.C., in and out of D.C., and as you come into D.C., I think it's Independence or Constitution, I get them confused, but one side you're going by the Lincoln, you come across the bridge, go by the Lincoln, and you're on the side with the Vietnam Wall, World War II going up, you're going to hit the Washington Memorial. On the other side, which is usually routed as you come through town, you know, one way, you know, with traffic during the morning, if you're coming back through D.C., headed out to Arlington, you come back on the other side, and you're going down right beside you. On the left would be the FDR and Martin Luther King, and you're headed down toward the Jefferson Memorial. On the right there, you can now clearly see the World War One little monument put up by District of Columbia. And there's room on that right side before you get up to the World War One Memorial. There's room there. So, you know, we just got to speak up, and I know the Iraqi and Afghanistani vets are going to be pushing for theirs, too. But we need to keep them all together. You know, people come into town and you're going all over town seeing the sights, but our war memorials need to be co-located, and that's what we're pushing for is Area 1.
Yeah, that's made such an important thing, and I think between everything, because when you get families up there and you've got different generations, you know, again, we were in Vietnam and Desert Storm, and then you've got other ones where their fathers were in, you know, in Desert Storm, and now they went to Operation, you know, OAF, OEF, and then you got other ones in just like multiple wars, so the opportunity to go up there and commune with nature, God, or the other individuals between all the memorials, because there's something, I don't know, for me, and I, Denise, you and I have been together with her, there's something distinctly that you gain or you acquire or you feel as you go from one to one. I mean, you can start there at the Lincoln Memorial and then just... It's hard to describe. It's,
well, one
it's something
thing,
unique,
Doug, is,
and
a lot of history
everybody needs
been
to do in their
eliminated.
Lifetime.
I'm sorry.
Ray, what'd you say?
But a lot of history has been eliminated in schools sometimes, American history. And when young kids see all these things and they're able to identify, it makes them curious, and they become inquisitive. So they do learn, even on their own sometimes, and they'll read about the Korean War and different things, or they'll read about Vietnam, and you know, a lot of times they get a twisted view of things, but you know, it's a great place to take your family to and spend the day and just go around, and it makes you appreciate what you have sometimes. You think freedom is free, but somebody paid for that thing, probably with their blood, and we never need to forget that.
And I think all of us, I know, and we've been there one time or another, we've had the opportunity to be at the main tomb for the changing of the guard or anything like that. That's an experience that, as a veteran, that's totally unique in the annals of American history.
Yeah.
Scott, are you there with us yet? I mean, Ray, when you know when you've met with your veterans, I mean, some of the other ones I've met, and we've been there together and all this stuff, but what's the feeling when you get with your group that you were with when you go up to one of the memorials like that?
It was almost a spiritual thing. We had our small group the first time. It's 9 of us, but one of them was my company commander. Being that we had never been officially, stand down, because we were basically wiped out. We didn't know who was alive or dead. And then 30 years later, and one of the things I did the thing with the sand, you know, the dirt where we did that at the wall. And then I had the company commander to call us to attention, which we were in civilians clothes. And he said something about, said, you know, Marines don't salute without a cover and different things. He said, but Ray wanted me to do this, so I'm going to do it. So he called us to attention, and he formally dismissed us at the unit. You know, you do certain things because when you go up to the wall and you see your friend's name for the first time, you've seen it in years, it's almost like seeing him all over again. I'm telling you, it'll break your heart. And then you reach up there and you touch his name, and on the Vietnam Memorial is a reflecting wall, so you actually see yourself. And they have paintings where the dead guy is reaching from the inside out and the old veteran is reaching from the outside in, and somehow they touch each other. And there's a lot of reconciliation there. You know, we did some things right and we did some things wrong, Doug. And I know we all meant to do what was right, but there's sometimes that things don't work out. And so we have this guilt. And there's sometimes you almost talk to your buddy and say, man, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry it happened. And there's a lot of healing that goes on in that wall, and I'm sure the other other memorials also. And so it's very important to the veteran to make that trip.
You know, the Iwo Jima Memorial is, you know, off of the mall. That's out there by Route 50. And, I mean, that's a totally unique location itself.
Yeah.
And really, I mean, emotional, again, is just tying it all together. But, again, to have all of these in one centralized location, which is what Scott is trying to get accomplished,
It'd
just be so important.
Yeah. You know, there's been, estimates say there's been over 250,000 Vietnam veterans have committed suicide since Vietnam, or during Vietnam, and then now. And I think you have to wonder, how many died of loneliness? Because when you've been there, Doug, most people do not quite get it. They don't understand it. You know, they try to, but you have to connect with other people who are like-minded, who have done different things. And a lot of them died of loneliness, of not knowing what was going on in their own minds. And then nobody could quite understand it. He couldn't tell them. He couldn't relate. And so, you know, I burned the pictures that I had from Vietnam. And the reason I did it was I did not want to share it with people who just trashed it or they just didn't understand it. I saw two people walking the other day, and they looked like professional walkers. They had all the costume on, so, you know, the shorts and the sweatshirt. And it was cold out. But they were both smoking. And I thought, they don't get it. I don't know why they're doing the walking deal. They actually don't get it. A lot of people will have a outward expression like they want to know, but it's hard to explain it sometimes. Someone said one time that it's easier to isolate than it is to explain. And I think outside the veteran, it's hard to find somebody he feels comfortable with. Coming together in those memorials, getting with people, getting to have reunions and different things, they mean a great deal because we're able to get some of that junk out of us. And we get happy memories to cover up the bad memories. And that's very important to the veteran.
You know, there's so many often today we run into the problem where people don't feel concerned. They don't want to know. They don't want to understand.
Yeah.
And then when they bring the information up to them, they almost turn and run the other way because the feeling that they have, well, they can't do anything about it. They can't contribute. They can't make a difference.
Right.
And again, that's the reason, you know, we lost our co-host for this radio program, Paul Lyons. He gave up all hope.
Yeah.
And then the combination of alcohol and drugs and everything else just took the toll.
Well, they say you can live weeks without food, days without water, minutes without air, but you can't live very many seconds without hope. And there's such a loneliness that comes with the lack of hope that nothing's ever going to change and I can't make a difference. And so you kind of implode. You cave in on your own self and there's nowhere else to go, and that's when bad things happen. When we talk to young military guys and we talk about isolating, I know you're going to isolate. You get away from everybody and you get all by yourself. We make sure we tell them, do not take alcohol, drugs, pornography, something else too. Drugs, alcohol, pornography, and weapons. Because in that state of depression and loneliness, you're apt to do something. And then we tell them what to take with them, you know, something to drink, something to eat, something to listen to, something to read, and reestablish yourself, get your head straight, and then you're able to move forward. So it's important. Those things are very important. We're losing so many guys today, more than even Vietnam. And we have to, kind of intervene in their lives. And they
do
want
we
to
have
see anybody
Scott Stump on the line yet?
Scott, are you there with us yet?
He's hung up somewhere.
Okay, I'm going to give the website. I told you all we have a Facebook page, but there's a website. And it's the initials for the National Desert Storm Veterans War Memorial. So it's N as in November, D as in Delta, S as in Sierra, W as, whiskey, M as, whatever, memorial, .org. That's NDSWM.org. That is their website. They've been working on this for over 5 years now. We did get our bill through that made it happen with a vote of 370-0. And that was signed into law last year, I think, December 19th. And so now we're working on getting into Region 1 on the map, Area 1 in D.C. They're also working very hard to connect with veterans, raise money, get donations. They need $35 million to get going here, guys. So they're trying to get golf going, golf tournaments, I think, in 13 areas. Anybody and everybody can be involved in your state. I've told Scott we need to have the literature up that those of us in states that are wanting to help can have the letters that we should take to potential sponsors, potential donors. In order that it's all uniform, we need that from Scott Stump, who is the CEO, Chief Executive Officer, leading the charge. And he's been working on this dedicated for 5 years. I kind of left and I said, Doug and us and some of the others on Gulf War Illness have been going for 25 years now. But they've got a design. It seems to be very approvable. But we need to have the location. And we need people pushing and finding people that have money that want to donate huge amounts. They've been going out to at least 20 states, I think, so far. Scott and his cohort out there making pitches. But we need to multiply the people doing that. Scott, are you online yet?
I know when the producers talked to him, he was stuck on a train or something.
Yeah, on the metro line probably. We can line him up for next week when he's home if he didn't get online, but I've been trying to substitute for him. I was hoping he would be on today, but I did know he was up in D.C. making appointments and meetings and working the issue for the memorial. So we will put him down if he doesn't get online today, or regardless, I think we can have him online for next week's program too.
We'll definitely get all this set up. I mean, when on these memorials and everything, kind of like the Vietnam War, they had the whole design, you know, competition and everything else, and then funding. I mean, once they're established and again, they fall in, as you said, the emails go to the National Park Service. But how did all this stuff happen? Where does the funding come from? I mean, you might be able to get some money through Congress, but more than likely what you just get is a dedicated area.
Each of the memorials, and for sure the Vietnam, and I'm pretty sure Korea and World War II, all raised by public fundraising. Just like what I'm saying, that we need to get involved, contact industries in our state. I'm going to try to contact Coors. They've got a good veterans group out there. And I'm starting to think who else I could take the materials to and at least put a pitch in. Is Scott online?
No.
No. Okay, but all the memorials are, they, you know, they provide the land, but we got to build it. We got to raise the funds to build it. And the upkeep. That's all, you know, like the Vietnam Foundation. I can't think of the guy's name right off my top of my head today, but, you know, they've raised funds to, you know, keep it, you know, clean, keep the lighting working. You know, they coordinate with the Park Service. They raise funds continually to keep it going. The functions they have there, Veterans Day and Memorial Day. The museum that they're building for the Vietnam War Memorial Museum, that's all being raised. Public, you know, private fundraising. So it's a huge job that Scott took on in heading it up. And I got to compliment him. You know, we talked when he first got started that we needed to get moving on it, and I gave my ideas and gave him some more ideas when I talked to him this past week. But we all need to be involved. And the other thing is to remember and look up where your sites are in your home state, you know, and that could be an area to have reunions at, as close to those for that state. I know we've got one main one that was spearheaded by a Vietnam vet that's close to our capital downtown. Many people don't know the history of it, but, you know, they got it done by pushing through the state and getting funding from private donation and public-private donation. And there are, you know, little monuments throughout. I know I stopped on the road one time going to a meeting in Kansas City in Junction, and down at their little square in the middle of town by their courthouse, here was one of the Gulf War memorials. So they're all throughout the country. This is our national one. We want it up in D.C. But don't forget the local ones. And if you don't have one, you know, it's just like the Vietnam vets got out there and pushed to have them, you know, in the state to, you know, remember people. They're not highly publicized. That's another problem. There is a book out listing memorials for the war. No one Vietnam vet wife did a book on it. I think she has a book on the Vietnam memorials, but they're not publicized. And those could be the areas where you call for your state to get together, your veterans to come together, you know, have an open-air meeting, you know.
Yeah.
There's a lot we need to do to heal, and not only PTSD, but to give out information and help each other as they fight against Agent Orange or, you know, the Gulf War illness, or, you know, we have soldiers coming back from Iraq, you know, from, you know, 03, that are showing same symptoms. So there is a need for veterans to start reconnecting. And somehow, you know, our VFWs, our DAVs, our legions do their thing, but it doesn't cover everybody. You know, we need to start being really big in our ideas and think outside the box.
Well, Denise, it's been 25 years, and if somebody, you know, they were exposed to all these uranium and all these different things that you guys talk about that I never really understood until I got deeper into it. If they've been dealing with that for 25 years, we're probably losing people constantly.
Oh, we are. That's why I have focused on that. That's why I commit myself to be up at the Research Advisory Committee, the hearings we have on it. I do everything I can to be there. I do everything I can, and Doug does too, to get the information out. But, yes, we are losing our Gulf War vets. A tremendous amount was lost since the war.
Right.
Tremendous.
Well, what they always say is it's better to give a person flowers while they're still alive. Don't wait until they're dead. And that's the importance, to go ahead and get this memorial done before they're all dead. Look at the people who died from World War II all these years, 50 years, that never saw a memorial. They never saw anything about that. And that were probably the most appreciated men coming back and women coming back. But yet they never had a memorial for 50 years, I think it was.
Yeah.
And so we can't wait until everybody's gone before you do something like this. And the quicker they do it, I think the quicker the healing will come.
You know, it's all important, too. And I think as a veteran, the veterans don't necessarily have a whole lot of money.
Right.
So, can contribute by helping and talking and speaking up and helping people other raise money. I mean, even if you only donate a quarter or you don't donate anything if you don't have the money, but you're just trying to support it, then it will make a difference.
It will.
I mean, some people say, you've got to have a whole lot of money and donate a whole lot of money to make a difference, and you don't.
It'll make a lot of difference to the veteran or whoever it is that, or the families that give $5, because they'll be part of that memorial. And when you have a memorial up in D.C., the congressman or senator, whoever it is, looks out their window and they see a memorial, it always is a representation of the people that they're serving, and it always is there. It's a perpetual reminder that something needs to be done for these folks.
And
Scott,
have
you joined us by chance yet?
People that set up the flights for the World War II veterans to get to D.C., flights from all over the country. And that got organized, and they took the vet and a person to go with them, and they took them to the memorial. And they take them in. There's a big welcome for them. And
well, we're out of time again. Ladies and gentlemen, the key thing is the National Desert Storm War Memorial. Please help find out the information on the website and help Scott Stump get this accomplished. Thank you, and good evening, and God bless. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Doug.